Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Welcome. A few things to know before we get into it. Number one, we swear.
Yeah, we do.
And tiptoe right up to the line and then slightly over it on the heretical blasphemy side of things occasionally.
Yeah, we do that too.
Our hearts are in the right place. Sometimes that leads us astray.
Yes. Our hearts can be wrong.
Yeah, more on that later.
Yeah.
Also, we're Catholic, but you don't have to be to listen and contribute or enjoy or hate us and write us a note. Either way, that's just fair warning and you've been notified. So here at Church Drunk, you have two co-hosts. Joining me is guests.
Hello.
And I'm Dizzy, and we are going to talk about
the Desert
Lent
Fathers.
And the Desert Fathers.
We're going to the desert because it's appropriate for Lent.
And before we get there, just like an alcoholic on their way to rehab, we want to say what we're drinking.
Right.
So what are you sipping on?
Well, as an homage to the simplicity of the Desert Fathers their existence, I'm just drinking straight whiskey. So
keeping it simple.
Yeah,
wow.
Not dressing it up. I went Irish because that's what I had on the shelf.
Sure.
But I think any straight whiskey would work for the Desert
Fathers.
It's
kind of a little spring cleaning when you just drink the last of what's there.
Yeah. Also, we are a week away, inside of a week now, to St. Paddy's Day, which we know is near and dear to our heart
here
on Church Drunk. So
wow, there's no way we can ever top our first Church Drunk celebration of St. Patrick's Day, but
it was time to kill a bottle of Irish so that we can have a fresh one on the shelf by
exactly.
the 17th. So what about you?
Man.
What are you drinking, Diz?
I am drinking, in honor of the Desert Fathers, a St. Anthony cocktail. And I realized we hadn't done a recipe in a while. So, dear listeners, time to get out your glass and some vodka.
Get your shaker on.
To make a little cocktail drink along with us. So you want 2 ounces of handmade vodka or regular vodka or whatever kind of vodka you have.
Brought to you by Tito's.
Yeah, which is actually pretty decent. You should try it.
Mm-hmm.
3/4 ounce of B&B liqueur. About 2 ounces of some kind of sparkling wine, probably whatever you've got. A little bit of agave syrup or other sweet syrup or honey or simple syrup would work. A dash of bitters and some kind of citrus. It says a squeeze of fresh lemon, but I imagine you could make it work.
Any citrus will do.
As you can tell, I am not a straight cocktail follower of recipes, so I would say just splash those things in until it looks right to you. Put in some ice and you shake it up and put it into a martini glass or a regular glass and a little lemon on the side, and that's beautiful.
Good to go. The St. Anthony.
Yeah,
toast to St.
Anthony.
So the B&B is actually kind of a fun addition as well because Benedictine... B&B is Benedictine and Brandy, and Benedictine's one of those, like, sort of made-by-monks kind of...
Yeah, you said it, like the chartreuses as
well. Yeah, similar to that chartreuse that we've talked about before.
It's holy.
So,
extra holy.
Exactly. So, in honor of St. Well, St. Anthony. One of the earliest Desert Fathers. There are a lot of St. Anthonys. I don't know which one that cocktail is named after, but...
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also ancient. It's probably something they were sipping in their little caves.
Totally.
Yeah. Sure.
There was lots of citrus laying around.
They were sipping Tito's handmade vodka. Really, guys, you should buy Kirkland vodka. That's my real recommendation for you.
Wow.
Okay.
Not sponsored by Tito's anymore.
Nope. Sorry, Tito's.
So... We are talking about the desert and the Desert Fathers.
Yeah.
And you've been doing a little bit of Lenten reading.
It was my Lenten reading to read a short book. This is also a New Year's resolution to read real books.
Yeah.
And just so everybody knows how low my bar is set, there is not even 100 pages in the book, The Way of the Heart.
Right.
By Nouwen.
Yep, Henry Nouwen, a favorite of ours.
Yes, but it is chock full of wisdom, just to go to show you that simple is a great option.
Totally, yeah. I mean, it's a quick read. It's an easy read.
It is, but it's a really thoughtful read. And
it
he
is.
Does, you know, if you haven't read Nouwen, like he phrases things really simply, but it has a lot of depth. And it has a lot of complication in the thought itself, but he does say it in a way that is simple.
He does a great job, I think. I've read maybe 2 or 3 of Nouwen's works, and he has an amazing way of taking really, really complex, deep theological values and turning them into something that can be a very simple, practical, everyday kind of spirituality. It's still challenging. Like, he's definitely, he doesn't back away from, like, this is going to be hard, and this is a challenge, and this is a struggle, but he makes it so that something like the Desert Fathers, which are, like, these desert hermits who lived out in the middle of nowhere, can be part of just your everyday practice of spirituality.
Yeah, and he makes it accessible, but it's also really personal.
Yeah.
So that's, we like him for that.
Yeah. So now in one of, well, I think now in, he's not as famous as like a Thomas Merton, but he probably should be mentioned kind of along the same lines.
I think he is, and I think he mentions Merton himself. Yeah. He references him even in this book, and I had just chosen this one because it has a desert on the cover. It's the Way of the Hearts, or the Desert Fathers seem Lent appropriate.
Yep.
Without even noticing that it actually had a specific contemporary ministry bent. And so, like you were saying, it doesn't feel like a theology class, but it's pretty technical almost in some ways.
Yeah.
So
we're heading out to the desert, which is appropriate for Lent.
It is.
And this book, The Way of the Heart, is Nouwen's attempt to kind of take this really, really austere sense of spirituality that was practiced by these guys in the
fourth and fifth centuries,
early part of church history. And they went out, like, they called it the Fugamundi. The world was so corrupt that they had to leave the world.
Yeah, and now so it explains it like that there had to be, like, a new kind of martyr. There are witnesses against the evil of the world because the world was no longer technically an enemy of Christianity. So it wasn't illegal to be a Christian.
Right.
But now, suddenly, there's a new way, new thing to stand against, which is like the evil of the world. When you're no longer in crisis just to survive, your faith gets a little bit lax, a little too comfortable.
You can claim to be a Christian without actually practicing Christianity like in the way it's supposed to be practiced.
Right. So this guy who now one calls Abba Arsenius, so Father Arsenius, asks God like what he should do to be saved. And he kind of hears this message that he should flee from the world. And so he takes off into the desert.
Yeah. So that's where this the Fugamundi comes from. Flee the world, and you run away from it all. You get away from the evil and the corruption and the badness, and you go out to the desert. And what's interesting about it to me is that you run away from the evil and the corruption and the badness, but the accounts of the lives of these desert fathers, as they became known, as they kind of... So it's like one guy goes out to the desert to run away from it all. But then there's like this trail of people that are like, oh, what are you doing there? You know, master, I want to learn from you. Mm-hmm. And there had to be part of, you know, those first few that were like, fuck off. I'm here to be by myself.
Right. I'm fleeing you.
But at the same time, like, you know, like there's that pull to help others along the spiritual path. But they go to get away from the evil of the world. And what they encounter is the evil of themselves.
Yeah, like, so even though they're living in these, you know, they're all kind of in their own little cave, I guess, or, you know, they're focusing on solitude, they're focusing on being silent and praying, but then there's a bunch of them, and they end up having, like, their own, like, council meetings and, like, problems, and it is kind of funny.
Yeah. And there's these accounts of, like, the desert fathers, like, wrestling with demons, like, physical encounters.
So that is not in the Way of the Heart. Yeah. That's in your other book.
Right. Yeah. So a little bit of background here. Like, I read The Way of the Heart as part of my graduate program, and so I get a little confused as to what comes from this book and what comes from the other resources we looked at when we were kind of studying the desert fathers in this class. But there are accounts of actual, like, wrestling matches between a demon that would visit the desert father or whoever the hermit was in the middle of the night, and they would be like fighting and wrestling with this demon.
Like Jacob and
And like in my class we had Jacob's wrestling an angel, right? So they wrestling a demon, like, oh my gosh. And then they would have these, you know, these stories told about, oh no, he's so amazing because he went out in the desert and he wrestled. So it's kinda like, you know, there's Jesus going out and encountering the devil with temptation and things like that.
This is what happens.
But we had a pretty spirited conversation. That's a spirited conversation.
Cheers.
Unintentional, but cheers. In class about, like, is that, like, do you see that as something real? Like, is there some sort of external force that they would encounter, or was it, like, going and wrestling with your own demons? I am firmly in wrestling with your own demons camp, obviously.
He neither believes in angels nor demons.
But I do think, you know, like,
there is... I allow for both.
You do allow for both. Like, there is, like, a sense of... You flee the world, you run away from everything, and you're encountered with, like, if there is any negativity in your life, it is self-imposed. Like, you are encountering your own badness.
It's going to come with you. It can't
come from anywhere else.
Yes. You know? So this is kind of... So Nouwen breaks up this book into, like, these three parts, which are flee, mm-hmm. or we could call that solitude.
Right.
And then be silent, which is silence.
Yep.
And then pray always, which is his prayer section. Yes. And the solitude section is the first section, and it kind of hit me right smack in the face.
Yeah.
Because he talks about this idea, as you're saying, that you have your own demons or your own sins or your own evil that you're carrying around in you. And that's you're going to take that out to the desert with you as well. And he really relates it to the life of a minister. So, you know, if you have any work in the church, go ahead. You're a minister. You know, if you're ever trying to, if you're ever representing church or God in some even volunteer capacity to others, like I say, Dizzy says, you're a minister.
Dizzy's definition of minister.
Yeah, and I think you would, if in the, at least in the case of this book, because you can relate to it. And he really points out that, like, when you're in that solitude, we get squirmy.
Absolutely.
And like he chronicles out all these stages that you go through, and I could really identify myself in every single one.
Yeah.
And then you get bored. And then something does occur to you that you've probably done wrong or that something's not quite right with you. But then you, like, feel bad. But then you come up with an excuse like, no, like, I'm actually a good person. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, now and you're laying it all out there.
Right.
And this idea of being out there for a long time with that. You're sitting quietly. And they do talk about how you as a person in this modern age are not going to probably go out to a cave in the actual desert, but but your meditative prayer, or what we would sometimes call mindfulness these days, whatever your quiet prayer, your listening prayer.
Well, and even
you have to encounter these things,
and like that, the Lenten discipline, right?
Yeah.
Like choosing to give something up, like the whole. It seems so arbitrary and silly, right? To be like, well, I'm not going to eat meat on Fridays because it's Lent, and it certainly flares up inside of me from time to time. To be like, oh God, this is so fucking stupid. Like I just
this doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help. It doesn't do whatever. And that is that temptation to you know, walk away from the desert and go back and just be in the real world, because you're like, well, if the desert's not helping me, then why would I still be here? And I think there is like there's some psychological nuance going there of like how much of that is just rationalizing something
that it
you
was
don't
really,
want to do anymore.
It was really fascinating to see like how he lays out all these steps and they go on and on. You guys, there are so many
steps,
little phases, and if you have ever tried to do this, you will probably recognize yourself in them as well. But the point is that you finally get to a place of just being with God and just sitting in the solitude, and in that moment of understanding like how rotten you are, you've run out of excuses or stopped hanging on to them, that you then have such overwhelming compassion for everybody because you're kind of sitting with God and seeing how God sees everyone.
Yes.
That then from that place of no judgment, because you are so rotten, you're able to be that for other people,
and
be present to other people in the way that we identify as holy. When you've met those people who you're like, oh, that person radiates their vocation or their holiness, that's what they're talking about.
And that, I think, is a really important thing to keep in mind when you study any kind of, asceticism or you know, that sense, like the Desert Fathers, the goal was not to stay in the desert forever.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is always to be able to re-engage. And so, like, in the in the account of Saint Anthony's life, written by Saint Athanasius with a feast day coming up, he, at the end of it, he comes back, like, he goes back into the world, he re-engages, he shows up in, like, this city. And he's, like, radiant. Like, he is glowing.
Yeah.
And people, like, flock to him because he's been transformed in the desert into somebody who does see the world perhaps a bit more the way that
truly
God
in
sees
the image of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you found that place.
So the idea is not simply to run away forever. The idea is to run away until you are prepared to re-engage with people.
Right. And now it does make a good point that solitude, which I one of the things I really like, draws us closer to people through that compassion. So when you reach that level of compassion, and he also has a nice line about compassion being where spirituality and ministry meet.
Yeah.
Then that is what draws people in. You're ready to go. But then he also talks about keeping your fire strong. And he's got this whole analogy about, like, if you have a hot fire in your house, you don't leave the door open with the wind blowing through
the
time. Like, you have to kind of let people come to you and come to it and not, and kind of be watchful, because the moment you probably reach this moment of that compassion or that actual mindful Christ-like mind, it's going to be gone as soon as you go out for too long.
Totally.
Or leave it for too long.
Yep.
So it's always this balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think we know from experience, you know, if you've ever
right
given a lot, you got to go take care of it somehow.
Yeah. 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 So the first step is flee,
mm-hmm.
run away.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is like solitude, like silence, right?
Yeah,
like
actually silence.
Nouwen talks a lot about like how noisy the world is,
mm-hmm.
and how we get sucked into that, and that
how noisy we are.
We don't need to run away to a physical spot that is yeah. silent in order to seek silence in our own lives.
So here's the great irony: as we sit on our podcast,
yeah, right,
you know,
yapping,
talking about no, but really, like I felt like these first two sections of this book. So it's solitude and then silence. We're like a 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
So it's like, boom, like you think you're good at meditation, but you're not.
But you're not. Yeah.
Also, you suck.
Yeah.
And then number two, stop talking so much. So this is really kind of a quandary. I'm like, I don't know right now because I really took this to heart about the holiness of our talkativeness because
I don't know
Nouwen literally says, no. He's like, think about it. When you go somewhere, like, would that person be better off from your words or your silence? And I'm like, wow, I need to just think about that. Right? For like a week.
That is a bit of a gut punch.
Like,
yeah.
I do not think that nearly often enough.
Yeah.
I'm always like, sure, like let me listen to you and then I will respond.
Then I will talk. Yeah.
Maybe I should just shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is, you know, there is a very specific type of ministry for that. Like the ministry of just listening. And that was actually, it was
yeah.
a separate class, but like one of the classes that I took as part of that graduate program was, it was literally just a listening skills class.
Yeah.
And like, we had to practice things like just reflecting someone's feelings, right? Somebody storms into your
yeah.
room or your office or your whatever, and they're unloading all of this on you. And instead of being like, well, let's fix this.
Right.
It's like, that sounds really hard. Like,
and I think I'm actually pretty good at that.
Right.
But I always want to sum it
yes.
up or continue.
Right. That sounds really hard.
Yeah.
But let's talk
like,
about the next
and
thing.
And how do
yeah,
you
like,
feel now?
Go,
or
right.
like tell like something else. And it's just like,
yeah.
ugh.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you just sit and be?
Yeah.
And it's really hard. Like it's, we're not
yeah.
trained to do that. It's not part of who we are. But at the same time, like I think there is a certain amount of, and again, I'm just as guilty of it as anybody, but there's a certain amount of arrogance that's built into being like, well, let's, my job, you're feeling distraught and my job is to fix that. We may
right.
not have the skills to fix that, right?
Well,
like
and
we
sometimes,
might not be ready.
Because of culture, they're looking to you
right.
for some drop of wisdom. And it's kind of hard to say like, I'm sorry, like I'm actually in a desert father's phase right now.
Right.
So would you be just as happy if we just sat? And maybe they would,
yeah.
I don't know. But those are just people who are actually coming to you for advice. Like think of all the times we speak up or I speak up anyway.
Unsolicited,
like,
yes.
So there's something to think about there.
And there's
just say less.
There's a great story about the Desert Fathers. I can't remember if it comes from the Way of the Heart or if it comes from somewhere
you know.
Else.
Tell it.
Where there is, again, a convening of this sort of, like it's a bit of an oxymoron that they all run away and then they form these communities, right?
Yep.
And the elders, somebody has violated the rules of the community and the elders call together like
mm-hmm.
a meeting.
Yeah.
And there's one of the elders does not show up. One of the
mm-hmm.
fathers, one of the elders of the community doesn't show up. And so they send somebody to his house to summon him. And he fills a jug with water and the jug has a crack in it. And so he fills it with water and then he carries it with him all the way
yeah.
to show up. And they say, okay, well, so here we are, let's figure out what this person who violated the rules, how are they
yeah.
still going to be allowed in the community? Are they going to hear that you're not? And here he comes walking, carrying his cracked jug. And he just says, they're like, what's your opinion? And he goes, my sins flow out of me like water out of this jug. And yet here I am to try to judge somebody
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
And everybody just kind of went, huh.
Ruin everything.
Yeah, right? Like, I guess the guy gets to stay in our community then? And
yeah.
they all just kind of, like, shuffle on home, you know? And it's, like, that sense of humility to understand
mm-hmm.
that you're not supposed to fix it. You're not supposed to judge anybody. I think
yeah.
that's the kind of silence that Nouwen is talking about. Like, close your mouth unless there is really a situation that calls for your expertise. And then really think about what is your expertise in that situation, you
right.
know?
Right. I agree. And that story is from The Way of the Heart. And there's kind of another similar one where there's like a girl who's gotten like pregnant in a bad way all this stuff. And, you know, they want him to judge her. And he's just like, no, like, I'm going to give her like burial cloth, which I think is kind of harsh.
Right.
But was seen as like a gift because she was really, really sick. And I think there's this metaphor of like, we're all so sick anyway that you don't need more judgment. Yeah. At that moment, which is very Christ-like, and we've talked about this before, whether you're the Jesus or the John model, like you go toward the suffering first, because that's what's important in this moment. Or like Francis, you know, our current Pope says, you know, it's a hospital, like we're gonna worry about, you know, your long-term systemic illness later. Mm-hmm. We'll go ahead and treat that bone sticking out of your
body. Well, that's a big, so that's a whole separate book by Nouwen, is the wounded healer.
Yeah.
The fact that each of us is in our own way, like, broken and wounded, and the, like, Jesus was also wounded in his own way, but Jesus was the one who kept his wounds wrapped up so that he would be ready to go and help somebody else. So instead of standing there going, oh, I need help, I'm so broken, he was there to say, let me work with you. So that's like, that's very much a now and concept that, you know, we have to be at the ready.
Well, you know, he does come across, he's got this, the compassion is because you see the wound.
Yeah.
So that's always this backdrop, I think, to almost anything you read of his.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about fleeing, solitude, being silent.
Yeah. And the final step.
And the final one, which is pray always, or pray without ceasing, as Paul tells us. And this one's kind of interesting. Like the first two, I think, for me, were kind of the most countercultural or like the most challenging. Like this one actually seemed a lot more doable or like easy to wrap my head around because it talks about short prayers. So he's got a very like tangible or tactile, but technical way to do this, you know, which is just short prayers.
Right.
Like the Jesus prayer, which I did not even know came out of the Desert Fathers.
Yeah.
Which is just a one-line prayer. Mm-hmm. I think it's Lord Jesus, Son of God, hang on, have mercy on me. And some people later added a sinner, but the original version, I guess, is the simple version.
And I think Lord Jesus, Son of God is your in-breath and have mercy on me is your out-breath. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you're able to just kind of keep it going all throughout the day as long as you're like conscious of it.
And then he
gets built into your subconscious.
Right. That was the part that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe because I do already have a habit of repeating phrases. So for me, I was like, yes, like I'm a little more familiar with this in not a horrendous way of recognizing myself. I could recognize something good in myself in this aspect. But so he says like if you take your first 10 or 15 minutes of the day and repeat a line, whether it's, you know, God be my shepherd or the Jesus prayer or whatever. And then if you've said it enough, it's already like echoing in your heart or like in your mind.
Yeah.
And that it will just kind of arise and like let yourself be guided by that. So it's kind of mystical, but very doable, I feel.
Yeah.
So I like it.
And there's a story in there about, you know, like, I forget the details of it, but it's like a student asking the master, you know, how should I pray? And it's like, you just repeat this one phrase over and over. And you have to pray like 1,000 times or something like that. And the student is like, that's impossible. Like, you can never do that. And the message is it's got to be part of your being, not something that you do, but something that you are.
Yeah.
It's like this concept of prayer that is unceasing.
But like, what a healthy thing. Like, if you did it enough where your mental default was to come back to that line, like that alone probably would help you in so many ways.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that's a cool one.
Yeah. And it ties into the concept of pilgrimage, which I've always been a big fan of.
That he talks a lot about pilgrimage.
Prayer is movement and prayer is breathing and you try through some sort of pilgrimage. And it doesn't have to be a huge pilgrimage to, you know, holy sites or anything like that. It can just be you're trying to turn your life into prayer and that sets you out on a pilgrimage, you know, and with every step, with every breath, with everything, you're trying to draw yourself closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and along with that, like, the other part I liked in this was that he makes a point to say that he's not a believer of if you are doing other things and you can't be praying. Like, he used an example of, you know, two of these guys, like, with the one who stays in the cave all day only praying, saying to the other, well, how can you be praying without ceasing if you're, like, harvesting your garden or you know, doing the stuff. And the guy's like, well, listen, like you don't pray every minute when you're asleep and you don't do it when you're eating, but I, you know, say it while I'm doing my things and I earn a little money and then I give that to the poor and they pray for me. So actually I'm praying all the time. So yeah. I was like, all right, good little twist. But more is better for more prayer.
Yeah.
So whatever you do.
And I think a lot of times, in order to get to the more is better, you also have to understand that sometimes simpler is better, you know?
Like, back to that silent thing. Like, guess what? God does not need your essay
right.
on today's prayer.
Yeah. Like, and a lot of times we just dump on God in prayer. Mm-hmm. Dear God, here's all the things that I need. But in reality, just a simple request or a simple phrase or a simple act of mindfulness goes a lot longer to actually building a relationship between us and God in our lives.
Right.
So
it's an interesting way. So I highly recommend, we highly recommend The Way of the Heart.
Yeah, the book is The Way of the Heart by Henry Nouwen.
Or any Nouwen, probably.
Any Nouwen will get you a good ways into mm-hmm. Lent. Yeah, it's and they're most of them are short, and they're simple, and they're complex, and they're awesome. So
Pick it up.
Check out some Nouwen. And it's if you want to read about the Desert Fathers, it's The Way of the Heart. There's other books out there about the Desert Fathers. You could read St. Athanasius' account of the life of St. Anthony if you're really looking to get into some, like, 4th century mm-hmm. literature. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend the whole thing, but snippets. But,
Start at an easy entrance point here.
Yes, yes. Now, it's a gateway drug to the Desert Fathers.
Holy Father.
But that is our little summary of The Way of the Heart. The question of the day, though, is...
lest we be too sincere.
If we were to church drunk our way into a Desert Fathers community...
Yes, if you could, like, rewind suddenly...
And we were to go on the great Fugamundi journey... what would we be smuggling with us to help
because
us cope?
You know that we could not probably just take our like little sleeping sack and head out there because guys, like we are rotten, as Nouwen has pointed out, more rotten than any of the Desert Fathers. Yeah. So.
I mean, we
as
would maybe get
people.
To the point where we could actually do it, but like we would definitely be the people that are trying to like bend the rules.
I don't
break the rules for at least the first few months, you know?
Like, yeah, we'd be resistant to it. We would not be the people like radiating like Christ mind and like peacefulness. We'd be like the haggard ass people like staggering around, be like, what?
Yeah. So, Diz,
all right.
You're heading out to the desert. What are you going to bring with you, smuggling to help you with the desert life?
So, I am a reader and I would be really. Hard-pressed just to sit with myself. I think my mental escape would be
You get
reading.
The Bible. You get the Bible.
Okay, the Bible is great. Like, the whole thing. There's a lot. Okay, so there's a lot to read
in
there.
I think so, right? They're 3rd, 4th century. It's probably in Latin, but they get to bring it with them.
Okay, all right. So I'd be happy to have the Bible. I probably, if I was, like, coming into Time Traveler, would definitely smuggle in maybe something off our Lenten reading list, like my favorite escapist book.
I was
going to
say, what would you bring?
I think I would actually bring Jitterbug, because if I would like to take a time-traveling adventure, I would like to read Tom Robbins' Jitterbug Perfume over and over again.
Yeah.
So that would be, like, my guilty pleasure. Like, instead of, like, eating sweets or something, like, I just need to read a little chapter here.
I was thinking the same thing. That was the first thought that came to mind. I was thinking right away that I would bring Lamb.
Okay.
Which was, you know, just our favorite. But I'm like, you know what? I could read Lamb in, like, 2 days. Like, I would buzz through that thing so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I would maybe want something a little bit denser. So I thought maybe a Robbins.
Yeah.
I would probably look for, like, the biggest one.
Which
is, like,
the opposite of being silent to, like, read Tom Robbins' exuberance of language. But, okay.
Jitterbug would be a good one.
Yep.
Fierce Invalids, that's a good, thick Robbins,
you know.
So that would be a fun one. But then I also thought maybe, like, you know, my favorite book is Les Mis, and that, you know, like...
That's a dense
read. You want something that you can dig into and, like, digest and do
I want to escape
it. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, definitely a book, for sure. Okay.
So, a long, dense, nice, escapey book.
Yeah.
Okay. That was kind of, like, my number one thing, because I'm most worried about the stuff that I should be working on.
Right, the solitude. Yeah.
And the silence. Also, I like to be warm and comfortable, so I feel like I would be bringing some, like, good fuzzy socks, or, like, the hated Uggs.
Oh, God, Uggs.
So, I guess has this whole thing, but listen.
Uggs.
They're, like, giant slippers. It's great.
Yeah.
If I'm in the desert, I think I'd like warm, dry, not gross sandy feet.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, which number two?
I was actually thinking along in terms of warmth and comfort as well, but in a different direction. I was going to bring, like, a fire starter of some sort, because, I mean, my goal...
We don't get a fire starter there.
Well,
I assume there was a fire.
Well, again, time in the desert. I mean, I guess you could go next door to, like, the next door hermit and be like, hey, can I... Like, my fire went out. Can I borrow some of your fire?
So, okay.
But, like, I mean, I would want to learn how to, like, Bear Grylls my own fire with, like, two sticks.
Yeah, all right.
But imagine, like, the desert gets cold at night, all right? Sure. And I have watched enough survival shows to know that, like, when you have failed at making fire over the course of the day, that is about as low as your morale can get. So, like, I would want to do the whole, like, let's rub two sticks together to make fire. But if that didn't work, I would need, like...
Yeah.
Like a lighter, just something to start a fire without any fuss.
That's a good idea.
So, like, because at the end of the day, I need to be able to cook my food, I need to be able to boil my water, I need to be able to sit by the fire. And fire is like it's a morale booster. So, that's okay. one that would be a luxury comfort item.
I think I had assumed it would be there, so I'd probably have to trade my Uggs for a fire starter. But I'm going to say that I had a fire.
You can keep your Uggs and then come knock on my door and be like, can I borrow your fire?
And I'll be like, you guys up there, knock it off with the party. Because you know both of us, our last thing that we're bringing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
A flask full.
Yeah, for sure. I was like...
I ain't going to go to number sleep one on sad my list out the was desert.
A book. Number two on my list... was like a really nice bottle of whiskey. Like I'm talking like a like probably scotch, like a sipping whiskey, something that I can space out because I'm not gonna drink it every night.
Right, we're not trying to get drunk. We're trying to do this right.
I'm talking about when I have had a bad day in the desert.
Yeah,
and I you know like the rope broke on the bucket in the well. Like just shit went wrong that day. I am gonna want to be able to put my foot up next to my fire.
I like
read a chapter. of my book, and just have a thimbleful of really good whiskey, and then that'll make my day better.
That sounds like the best desert cave camping experience ever, but I think you're like the worst Fugamundo?
Fugamundista? Yeah.
Yeah. I know. All right. Well, I would definitely bring a flask full of something delicious as well.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Sure. I'm not about to think I can go out by myself in the desert for no end date without some booze.
What we've learned about church drunks today is that we have a heart that really wants to go to the desert, but not without warmth, good books, and good booze.
Sums us up. At least we know ourselves.
We can let go of everything else.
I don't need the world.
I just need something to read, something to drink, and something to keep me warm.
If we were single, that could be our, like, online profile. All right. Well, let us know. What would you take if you were to go out into the desert?
Totally.
To have a somewhat spiritual experience.
Spiritual-ish.
Maybe you're better than us and you would not sabotage yourself, but you probably would. So let us know.
Bring a Lucha Libre mask to wrestle with your demons.
Terrifying. Yeah. That would probably scare him.
I know, right?
See nothing like that.
Yeah.
So you could email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Yep.
You can tweet us up
on Twitter at churchdrunkpod. And
check out the blog. We're going to have a little post of some Lenten reads.
That went up yesterday.
There it is. There so go check it out.
Yep. And we hope that your Lent is going well.
It's almost over.
Yeah, we're at the halfway point, actually. We're beyond the halfway point. Yep. So Church Drunk, where we... are in the desert, but we're kind of like the cabana bar at the oasis in the desert. Yeah.
Serving up something delicious.
Cheers.
Peace.